Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 135 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and now her feeding. This is going to be a very unique and fabulous segment with a wonderful friend and colleague. Before we hop into it, though, just know that this episode of Her is made possible by our friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode and rate and review us, because I'm just sitting here waiting to hear from you. I read what you write, so I want to encourage you to share your thoughts. All right, it's time for Her.
Her. The podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about her.
All right, you've been hearing all about it. Seriously, you'd have to be on another planet and out of it completely not to have been hearing about intermittent fasting, time-restricted feeding. Oh my goodness gracious, what is going on in the nutrition world? Well, I am blessed and honored and so happy to have on a wonderful friend and colleague who's going to help us parse through this, because she's not only a premier researcher in this field, also the author of a fabulous book to kind of set you straight. Dr. Krista Verity is an associate professor of nutrition at the University of Illinois Chicago. Her research focuses on the efficacy of intermittent fasting for weight loss, weight maintenance, and metabolic disease risk reduction in obese people. Her work is funded by the National Institutes of Health, American Heart Association, International Life Sciences Institute, and the University of Illinois. She's published over 50 publications on this topic and is also the author of a book for the general public entitled The Every Other Day Diet. Krista, welcome to the Her podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
All right. So what is this? I mean, first of all, where did all of this come from? You and I, as experts in the field, have been sitting around doing our little thing, and all of a sudden, boom, it's everywhere. What started all of this?
Nobody knows exactly where it came from. Just the concept of intermittent fasting probably came from like religious fasting and Christianity, and then also Ramadan and Muslim religions. But the reason it got so popular over the past 5-10 years, I'm not totally sure. There was a BBC documentary entitled, what was it called? Eat, Fast, and Live Longer. And that's still aired today on like PBS here in the U.S. And I think that's what kind of got people really interested in it. And then a book called The Fast Diet, about 5-2 dieting, came out by Michael Mosley shortly after. So I think it just became, you know, a lot more, people just kind of saw it more in like on TV and that type of thing. But it really just kind of came out of nowhere in that sense. I've been researching intermittent fasting for the past about 10 or 12 years now. But I have to say, the first 5 years, nobody seemed to care. And then now everyone's really into it. So, you know, it's great.
Why did you decide to do it? There are so many other things to study in the field. What was it about intermittent fasting per se that really got you going?
So I started my studies as a postdoc at UC Berkeley, and I actually wasn't even interested in looking at intermittent fasting per se at the beginning. I was trying to tease apart the effects of fasting versus weight loss on cancer risk. So we're running these studies where we wanted to fast mice and not have them lose weight and kind of see what the effects on cancer risk were. But no matter what we did, no matter what type of fasting regimen we set up, the mice just kept on losing weight. So basically my experiments there failed. But then I thought, well, weight loss isn't always a bad thing. How about if we move this into humans and see if, people want to do this, if they can do it, and then if they lose weight from it. So that's kind of my kind of origin story with this.
I love it. I had forgotten the Berkeley part. You know, that is my alma mater. I have my baccalaureate and my master's degrees before I went to medical school. So already I like you even more, Krista. and you know, your story is fabulous because really at the end of the day, this is the way great science happens. You know, you kind of go down one journey and all of a sudden, you know, you say your experiments fail. Well, you know, basically what they did was they opened up other doors. And look at you now, as you're sitting here as really one of the premier researchers in this field. So for everyone out there who's utterly confused, raise your hands out there in her podcast land. Yep, just what I thought. Everyone's confused. Could you define intermittent fasting? What the heck does that mean? Because it's being thrown around by everyone out there in the media.
Yeah. So very basically, intermittent fasting is a period of not eating followed by a period of eating, but it doesn't equate to starvation. With all intermittent fasting regimens, you get to eat every day. It's just kind of either limited calorie-wise or confined time-wise. But it's basically just periods of not eating followed by periods of eating. Did you want me to explain the different types?
Heck yes, please dive right on in.
Oh, sure. Yeah, definitely it's a little, all the terminology is definitely pretty confusing. So intermittent fasting, I kind of view it as an umbrella term for three major types of fasting. There's what we call the 5-2 diet, so that's when you fast on 2 days a week, and those can be any 2 days in the week, and people typically consume about 500 calories on those days, and then the rest of the days they can truly eat whatever they want. So there's no limitations on what we call the feast days for, you know, calories consumed or types of foods or anything like that. Then there's the second type is alternate day fasting, and that's when you have one of those fast days every other day. So it's the same thing with 500 calories. You can put the 500 calories anywhere in the day that you'd like. We've run studies showing that, you know, if you have those calories as a lunch or dinner, or even if you like to spread them out as like 100 or 200 calories throughout the day, it really doesn't affect weight loss. You pretty much lose the same weight no matter kind of how you do the 500. And then the third type is time-restricted feeding. That's become a lot more popular in the past, about 5 years or so. It's definitely kind of the new one. And that just involves limiting the timing of food intake to usually the most common one is 16-8, so you're limiting your feeding window to about 8 hours per day. A lot of people choose to, you know, say a window of like 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. That's pretty common, or even like noon till 8 p.m. And the goal is to consume all your food within that window, and then the rest of the 16 hours of the day, you're just water fasting. And then aside from intermittent fasting, there's another type that kind of doesn't fall under that umbrella, which is periodic fasting. And that's what Dr. Walter Longo studies. And that's when you basically fast for about 5 days out of the month. It's usually 5 days all grouped together. And then the next 25 days of the month, you would just be able to do whatever you want.
And basically, he's saying that you can basically eat whatever kind of dietary intake that works best for you. But it's just a 5 days of hypocaloric eating in a particular regimen that he's got. Now, you wrote this book, The Every Other Day Diet. Tell us about that and why you wrote that.
Oh, sure. Yeah, so that came out in 2013. And yeah, I wrote that book. I saw that there was a lot of interest in intermittent fasting after that BBC documentary came out. And then I thought, wow, and there was also a lot of confusion from the general public about fasting. So I really wanted to put out a book that was actually based on scientific evidence. So that book probably covers about six of my clinical trials in alternate day fasting. And, you know, we explored a whole bunch of different things, like can you exercise with this diet? You know, can you eat a normal kind of like more of a high fat type American diet? Are you still going to lose weight if you're just not changing any of your foods? We also looked at is alternate day fasting effective for weight maintenance? So what do you do after you you lose all the weight? So it covers all, I'd say it's kind of the key questions I just get from, you know, health professionals and the general public. So I wanted to put it all together just to give people some pretty straightforward answers based on science.
Okay. So tell us, you know, how is this book different than all the other ones out there. Dear God, I mean, if you go to Amazon.com, good luck. it's just mind-boggling, the stuff that's showing up out there. And what terrifies me, and this is why I'm so happy you're on the show today, is that it's being written by every Tom, Dick, and Harry, and Mary, and Jane, and Joe out there with no background whatsoever. They sound like they're making it up as they go along, or it's like a fitness professional with a cohort of one, them, and they just sort of write stuff. And so what I'm loving is that, you know, you are a PhD and an associate professor of nutrition and someone who's devoted a dozen years to studying this. So I'm going to listen to you before I listen to anybody else. And that's true for everybody out there. You better make sure to do that. So, you know, what is this? What is the real essence of the every other day diet? What does somebody do?
So with every other day diet, scientifically, we call it alternate day fasting. And really what you're doing is you're having a fast day alternated with a feast day. And again, the fast day is when you consume about 500 calories or so. And you can kind of spread that out over the day or consume it as one meal, lunch, dinner, breakfast, whatever works for you. And then the next day, you truly get to eat whatever you want. So a lot of people really like this diet in the sense that, or mainly because you kind of get a break from dieting every other day. Like with traditional calorie restriction, you have to, you know, you're constantly like recording calories in an app, or you're always having to make sure that you're on track. But with this diet, you know, you don't have to avoid carbs. You don't have to avoid whole food groups or completely change your pantry. You really just have to make sure that, you know, every other day on those fast days that you stick to that calorie goal. And we've shown that people lose anywhere from about 10 to 30 pounds over the course of a month or two. So it's, you know, most people lose 1 or 2 pounds per month, and it seems to work quite well.
Wow. So when you're doing this, I know the answers to these questions, but I'm going to prompt you because I want you to explain all of this. So a lot of people may say, but wait a minute, you know, wouldn't you sort of, as it were, neutralize all the nice things you did on fasting day by, you know, having your little feasting day?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So that's pretty much the first thing I studied in humans, because I thought, you know what, if people are just going to kind of overdo it on those alternating feast days where they can eat whatever they want, then they will, you know, there's no point to it. Because if you can basically, just compensate for all the lack of food on the feast day, on the fast day, by eating more on the feast day, then you're not going to lose any weight. So what we found was that, and I've probably studied about 600 people or so at this point, just doing various alternate day fasting protocols. And we found that people only eat about 10 to 15% more on their feast day. People actually report not being able to binge on those feast days. They tend to get kind of fuller, faster, they noticed over the course of the diet. And we've published papers on kind of how fasting affects hunger and that type of thing. And hunger does go down and fullness does go up on the fast days over the course of the trial. And on the feast day, people just feel that they're unable to binge. It's a really interesting, and we're not sure why that's happening. At first I thought it was stomach shrinking, but then I talked to a gastroenterologist and it turns out that doesn't exist. But gut motility may be slowed. So basically how fast food is moving through your stomach and your intestines, it may actually slow down, we're hypothesizing, with fasting. So that means that, if it's kind of staying in your gut longer, then it will kind of help you feel fuller a bit longer, opposed to processing it really fast, and then all of a sudden you're left with nothing and you're hungry again. So, there's still lots of things to study in this area. But people just don't binge, and they just can't binge on that feast day, and that's why they're losing weight.
Well, this is, you said the word binge, so you must have ESP, because I was about ready to ask you. You went ahead and did a very nice study, if I remember correctly, maybe at least one, on people who have, as it were, binge eating disorder. You looked at disordered eating and what the effect of this kind of regimen is on that. Why don't you share what you found?
Oh, sure. So we studied, it wasn't in people with binge eating disorder. We actually, I should mention, people that do have diagnosed binge eating disorder do not do well on this diet. Those people do tend to binge on the feast day. But we ran a study to see if people that were not diagnosed or did not have any disordered eating habits at baseline, if those people would develop eating disorders with fasting. Because I found that at first when I was presenting this data, a lot of doctors and dietitians became very upset over the course of my talk, saying, you know, you're giving people eating disorders. People shouldn't be doing this on and off dieting. You're just messing people up. So we decided to run a study to see, okay, are we actually giving people eating disorders? And the results of the study show that no. Basically, people don't, if they're not predisposed to eating disorders when they start the study, they don't develop any disordered eating. In fact, they become better restrained eaters, which means that they become more careful with how many calories they're eating. And yeah, they just become more cognizant and just, you know, more aware of what they're eating. So the diet actually has either benign or beneficial effects on eating behaviors. And we haven't seen any negative effects like giving people eating disorders.
All right. So if someone has been, you know, I mean, of course, binge eating disorder, you know, this has been kicked around for a while. You know, it's really now shown up as a real thing. Over the course of the last 5 years or so, people have been trying to really define it more precisely. But, you know, really, there are some people who just sort of, I mean, a binge is relative. I mean, for one person, it's having an extra 300 calories. Another guy, it's 3,000. I'm just curious. My money would be on if you're one of those people who just does a little bit more of that, as it were, kind of mini binging. I think you'd do just fine with this kind of a protocol. I think if it's much more severe, maybe this is where we run into a lot of mental health issues and other related that will complicate the entire thing. I think that's one of the reasons why you found what you found with people who are diagnosed already with binge eating disorder. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think binge eating disorder, I'm not, you know, obviously I'm not like a psychiatrist or somebody in that field, but I think there's a diagnosis with the, what is it called, like the DSM manual?
DSM, yeah. They actually do now have that. Yeah, it used to be lumped into, in the old DSM books, it used to be lumped into, you know, as it were, other issues. It was sort of like a garbage can term, you know, but now it's gotten parsed out and it has its own unique diagnostic code, which also means that insurance will reimburse treatment for it, which became, you know, and the reason why I brought that up is because the largest number of people who have a sort of disordered eating are actually binge eaters. They're not anorectics and they're not, you know, bulimics. People who binge. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why it's really so important, because if you're studying obesity, I mean, most of these people have binge eating, you know, in their background. You don't get to be obese without overeating in one pattern or the other. So I've always been quite fascinated with that little piece of it. This whole issue of time-restricted feeding, you know, tell us a little bit about what that really means. And is this something you're looking at right now as well? Because I know you have a new study out.
We actually just ran the first study in people with obesity for a time-restricted feeding study in that population group. Because there hasn't actually been that many human trials in time-restricted feeding. Again, it's pretty new. But all the other ones were in kind of normal weight people. So we did a 3-month study where we took around 50 people and we had them do the 8-hour time-restricted feeding that I was talking about before. And so kind of just to recap that, we basically had those people eat between 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. So they could eat whatever they wanted. They didn't have to count calories at all in that time frame, so in that 8-hour window. And then the rest of the hours, so basically after 6 p.m. up until 10 a.m. the next morning, they were just water fasting. So they could drink as much water as they wanted, and also some calorie-free beverages like black coffee or black tea. And then like we allowed a couple diet sodas as well, but not too many. So that was basically what the protocol was. And we found that people lost a little bit less weight than what we saw with alternate day fasting. They lost about 3% of body weight. How much was it? It was like close to 7 pounds, if I remember. But I'd say the most fascinating thing about it was that after this 3-month period, people actually reduced their calorie intake just naturally by about 300 calories per day. So they didn't have to calorie count. They weren't, you know, again, constantly writing stuff down in a food diary or recording it in an app. All they had to do was adhere to that timing window, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and then they just naturally dropped 300 calories per day, and that's how they, yeah, lost that weight. And we definitely found that people seemed a little happier with this protocol than alternate day fasting. Most of the people said that they would continue doing the diet after the study was over, whereas with alternate day fasting, maybe only half the people would say that. So, yeah, I think it was just a little easier to stick to. And again, you know, if anyone wants to try this on their own, I don't think it really matters where you put that 8-hour window. And some people even expand it to a 10-hour window. There's been studies by Sachin Panda's group that show that, you know, even if you expand it to a 10-hour window, you'll lose about, 10 pounds or so after 4 months in their study.
That's
so
correct. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, it's a fascinating new diet. And, you know, for people that maybe struggled with other fasting regimens, now that we're starting to get a bit more data and more scientific evidence, this one seems like it could really work and might be easier for people too.
To really adhere to. And, you know, as I always say, I've been laughing, and I know that Dr. Sachin Panda over at the Salk Institute was probably got a real heave-ho over this one, and that is the recent Nobel Prize in Medicine and Physiology, which was given out about 4 months ago, was given to three American scientists who discovered the genes the gene for circadian rhythm, the light-dark rhythm, which is really what this whole time-restricted feeding thing revolves around, including our planet, for the light and dark segments. And it seems to be really quite fascinating. I would probably think, I'm just sort of, you know, thinking out loud here with a smart one like you, that in the best of all worlds, I think the people who probably do the best are the ones who are able to feed during the day and not feed late at nighttime. This is something
absolutely
that Dr. Panda and I, you know, kind of kicked around when I was sitting in his lab one day. And I just said, I don't know. We've got some metabolic data out there that says it's not the world's greatest thing to be, you know, eating late at nighttime. And I know that there has been great controversy and spear chucking episodes among nutrition experts, among, you know, who sit back and say, well, it doesn't matter when you eat your calories. Well, I think that, you know, other things are going on, and that is that we're discovering that insulin resistance really, quite frankly, glucose metabolism is probably more optimal earlier in the day until the mid-afternoon and less so in the evening. And that probably is a reason why, you know, it's not a great idea to be packing it on, you know, with all the macronutrients, especially carbohydrate, later in the day. But, you know, again, stay tuned while we all try to make some sense of all of this craziness, you know, one way or the other. Oh my gosh. Doesn't it make sense? Oh my gosh. And so, wow. One last thing. What about physical activity on all of this? Right.
So it's a great question.
You know? Yeah.
So when I kind of started doing these studies, I just had a lot of questions and a lot of concerns about like how well you could incorporate fasting into like just a regular lifestyle. So one of the studies I ran early on was, you know, can you exercise? Can you keep on going to the gym or doing whatever you're doing with fasting? And we found that you can definitely exercise on your fast day. People actually report having a boost of energy on their fast day. It's interesting. I do have to say, though, that the first The first week or so of getting adapted to alternate day fasting or probably any fasting regimen is a little tricky. But after usually like a 7 to 10 day period, people actually find it pretty easy. And then they actually get this interesting boost of energy on the fast day. So in our study, we allowed people to pick whether or not they wanted to exercise on a feast or fast day. And they came into the research center. So we actually saw this happening. It wasn't just like self-reported. And they chose to exercise on fast days just as much as they did on feast days. They said they had no problem doing it. It didn't change, you know, the way that they felt about exercise or their energy levels. So that was really interesting.
Yeah. And I'm going to be perfectly blunt with everyone out there. And that is, I'm a 16-8 girl. I love it. And I'm also a triathlete.
Oh, great.
And I brought up the physical activity piece of this because honestly, I do perfectly fine. I'm well adapted. I've been at this for a number of years now, after I read the early data. And everyone has to do whatever works best for them, but you do what you can. I've played around with a lot of stuff, and I know that all of you out there are scratching your head saying, wow, maybe it's time to scope some of this out. So obviously I want you to run on over and look at Every Other Day Diet. Grab that book from Dr. Krista Varady. That's V as in Victor, A-R-A-D-Y. And really get a good sense of what this whole new world is about, of intermittent fasting, time-restricted feeding, et cetera. So Krista, What's on the horizon now? What are you going to be looking at now? You've done this human study. Now what?
I really want to run some longer-term studies in fasting because the longest one we ran to date is a year, but that's not really long enough. So we want to see if people can stick to this for the long term because, again, it's kind of like what you just said. You know, people need to find something that works for them, and you have to figure out something that works for you long term because the minute you, like, stop doing the diet, you're probably just going to gain all the weight back. So we really want to see if people can incorporate
this. So what kind of fasting are you going to study? Are you talking about time-restricted?
Yeah. I'd like to study time-restricted feeding and alternate day fasting as well, and looking at different population groups. So far we've had people with obesity, but they were generally quite healthy. So now we want to move into type 2 diabetics and maybe people with PCOS, so polycystic ovarian syndrome, which is affecting a lot of women, a lot of American women these days. So just different people with thyroid disorders, seeing if fasting can help people that traditionally had, you know, struggled to lose weight.
Okay, and one last thing. Do you see a difference between men and women? Is there a gender specificity here? Or is everyone kind of adopting to this, you know, however they do it?
So all of our studies we've had, I'd say it's only been about 10% men. So, you know, most of our studies we have anywhere from like 50 to 100 people. So we haven't had kind of enough people to actually run like well-powered statistical analysis between men and women.
Right.
We have kind of analyzed that when we like grouped all of our data together, and we haven't seen anything yet. The only kind of difference we saw was between premenopausal women and postmenopausal women. When we analyzed those two groups, it was amazing. We actually found that postmenopausal women tend to lose about twice as much more weight as premenopausal women with alternative
There is
fasting.
A God.
It's amazing.
A boatload of women are out there like, everything else goes to hell when you're postmenopausal. At least there's some good news.
And then, people ask, well, why is that happening? And to be honest with you, I don't know, but it may be because postmenopausal women have, you know, had time to try a bunch of diets, and maybe they only signed up for our study because they knew that they could do fasting. I don't know, but they've done amazingly well on this diet. It's super impressive.
I'm loving it. So now when you're saying this diet, are you talking about the time-restricted feeding, or are you talking about the every other day?
Oh, every other day.
Every other day. Then you heard it out there. So now all of a sudden everybody's Googling on Amazon. They're ordering Every Other Day Diet by Krista Varady. All right, everyone, we've been talking to Dr. Krista Varady from the University of Illinois, Associate Professor of Nutrition and author of Every Other Day Diet. Her website is EOD, like every other day, diet.com. That's EODdiet.com. And her Twitter handle is Dr. Krista, that's K-R ISTA Verady, V as in Victor, A-R-A-D-Y. So go over there and tweet along with her. Krista, thank you so much for being on the Her Show.
Oh, great. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. And everyone out there, remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And then just take a moment now and rate and review this wonderful episode we just did with Dr. Verady, because I'm sitting here waiting to hear from you. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at Pam Peek MD, because I'm tweeting away here, and also on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek. You can also check out our Her Show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.